Right now, I want to talk to Dr. Ian Winifield, who's an ecologist with a speciality in lake ecosystems with the Centre for Ecology and Hydrology in the United Kingdom. And he leads an annual fish survey of a particular lake. And he joins us now from the BBC studios in Cumbria. Good afternoon, Ian.
Good afternoon, Derek.
So the lake we're talking about, and the fish in particular. So tell me more.
Well, the lake we're talking about is Bassenthwaite Lake, which an interesting aspect of it is it's the only water body in the Lake District which is actually called the lake. So the lake is Bassenthwaite, and the fish is a fish which I'm surprised if you've ever heard of. It's the Vendace, which is the rarest freshwater fish that we have in the United Kingdom.
Well, I'm sure Ken will know about the Vendace. That's his speciality, is fish. Have you heard of the Vendace, Ken?
I have indeed. I have indeed. We have a very closely related species here called the pollen, and I think we'll probably be chatting to Ian about both.
What's the problem with the Vendace?
Well, I guess the problem with it is it's very demanding of it for its environmental requirements. It's, in appearance, it's something of, looks a bit like a herring, but it has a lot of the characteristics of a small trout. Mm-hmm. So like trout, it needs very clean water, it needs lots of oxygen, it likes relatively cool water, so water can easily get too warm for it. So because of those features, it has quite a demand on the kind of habitat it needs, and it's just that kind of habitat which can be impacted quite badly by a variety of things that we do as humans as we go about our lives.
Now, we're talking about this fish as if it exists today, and it does in that lake, but I'm told over a decade ago that the Vendace was declared locally extinct.
That's correct. Locally extinct, or I believe the technical term is extirpated.
What?
So the species... extirpated.
Sounds painful.
Yes, indeed, yes. It's just another way of saying locally extinct without upsetting some of the more pedantic colleagues that I have in the scientific world.
So how big is this lake and who decided it was locally extinct?
Well, the lake, it's about 585 hectares, which I can never picture in my head. I'm too old for that. But it's a medium-sized lake, maximum depth about 22 metres, so 60, 65 feet. It sits in the English Lake District, so in the national park over here. And the lake is managed by a combination of different bodies, like many parts of the Lake District. And the people who have direct responsibility for the fish populations are really our environment agency. So it was through them that we used to do these surveys, and they ultimately made the call on the fish being considered to be locally extinct.
And Ian, is it only extinct in the context of that particular lake, or the other areas where it's known to have existed? Have they been declared extinct as well?
Well, that decision was just related to that lake, but in the UK, and in fact in all of the islands here, we've only ever had four populations of Vendace. There were two in southwest Scotland and two in the Lake District. Now, sadly, we lost the two in southwest Scotland many decades ago, so they went some time ago and have been considered extinct for decades. And then, as I say, we lost the population in Bassenthwaite Lake in the early 2000s, leaving us with just the one native population in a lake called Derwentwater, which is just a little bit upstream of Bassenthwaite Lake. So the two lakes are connected by about 3 miles or so of river.
Ian, I was going to ask you, given that it's a freshwater fish and Britain is an island, can you explain to our listeners how this fish ever got there in the first place after the Ice Age? Where did it come from? It didn't survive the Ice Age, surely.
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. No. I don't think it survived the Ice Age locally, when literally all our fresh water was ice or covered in ice and unsuitable. And the history of our part of the world in terms of freshwater fish is really of a slate being wiped clean at the last glaciation, 10, 12 or 8,000 years ago, depending on exactly where you were. And then it's a consideration that we could only have species arriving as they colonised naturally. But at that time, the geography was quite different. The seawater was far less saline, and the Vendace and some similar species can actually survive quite well in low salinity water. And water temperatures were a lot colder as well. So at that stage, the Vendace and its relatives could get to what would become our fresh waters by coming through relatively low salinity seas.
Ian, this is an interesting scenario because the ice melts and you get salmonids moving into freshwater, and they're there for 12,000 years, something like that. So they've all had a chance to become peculiar, as we say in Ireland, develop Irish solutions to Irish problems, in the words of a famous Irish politician, referring to something quite different. Now, we have the pollen of Loch Ness and Loch Earn, and you have the Vendace in Britain, and there's another Vendace in Europe that some people would regard as a separate species to the one you have in England, and others would say, no, it's merely a subspecies. So you have a great profusion of different whitefish in lakes. Now, they've had enough time to become almost species in their own right in the various lakes. Or is there more or less a galaxy of these things, or is there one core one of which they're all simply a variant?
That's a very good question, and that's something which has resurfaced again in recent years. The taxonomy of these species, and we're talking of four or five main species in Europe, it's been changed quite a lot over the last 100 or so years. Some of it's just down to personal opinion, but now with more recently, we have molecular techniques to really get to the DNA of these species and try to resolve things a lot better. So we're still involved actively with some of these populations. And I think the best way to summarise it, there's still some debate about what is a different species and what is not a different species.
Ian, in terms of the future for these very delicate fish, we're really quite worried here in Ireland at the moment because just by chance, a chap who did a big study on pollen is now looking at Asian clams, Rory Sheehan. And when Rory looked at the top lake, Loch Allen, in the Shannon system, he found a few pollen, which was great because, again, just like yourselves, we thought perhaps they were extinct. But in one of the tributaries of the Shannon at this stage, we have found 26 million, yes, that's million, Asian clams in one small stretch of river.
No, it's not fantastic.
No, it's not. No. And at the end of the day, those clams are going to go down into the lakes themselves. What sort of threat does that pose for species such as the Vendace?
Well, these clams and similar species, we know they're a potentially a tremendous problem, both for the way we use our fresh waters and for the native species that we have. And I think the main way in which they can really have a problem at the ecosystem level is these clams, these different types of mollusks, they filter the water for the food they eat. So they're feeding on very small animals and plants that live in the water itself. And as they filter the water, they're basically changing the energy flow within the system. So energy and material that would once have gone straight up into the open water pelagic is being bound up more into the communities living on the bottom of the lake or in the sides of the lake. And the Vendace and our related species are predominantly fish of the open water. So there could be a sort of slow turning down of the basic fueling of that part of the system. So I think that can be the major impact that could come onto these populations.
And of course, the Vendace, I suppose, are a biological indicator of the quality of the water in the lake in the first place, because obviously they only live in lakes that have pristine water conditions.
Yeah, exactly. I very much agree with that. They're a kind of canary in the coal mine, if you like. We have some fish species, such as roach and to some extent perch, which can live in a wide variety of water qualities. But Vendace really need it to be very, very clean, high levels of oxygen, and very importantly, very clean spawning gravel. So they spawn somewhat like a trout, in that they lay their eggs in the late autumn, early winter on gravel areas. But unlike most trout, the Vendace are doing this in lakes, so their spawning grounds are very susceptible to fine sediments. So if the Vendace are reproducing, you know that you have essentially a very clean lake.
Now, in 1990, Ian, you sent in the fire brigade and you took Vendace from Lake Bassenthwaite, if I pronounce it correctly, and you took them up to a lake in Dumfries, in Galloway, Dumfries in Scotland, called Loch Skene. Do I pronounce that right? Do you pronounce the finally? Is it Skeeny? But anyway, you put them in there and you have, I gather, a very substantial population of these things there now. Was that a fire brigade? Was it simply a fire brigade effort? And do you recommend fire brigade efforts like that for the various other populations we have? Do you recommend finding a lake that's safe and secure and protected and moving them in just to make sure they don't disappear?
Yeah, well, the two aspects to that. One, I'm an environmental scientist, so my job in life is to provide the scientific information to help people who need to make these management decisions and also provide advice where required on exactly how to go about things. So the decision to establish this refuge population, and yet I say lock skein, but bear in mind I'm an Englishman, so that may not be terribly accurate. So let's call it lock skein. We provided advice and information to our environment agency operating down here, and we also work very closely across the northern border into Scotland. And up there, the conservation body most relevant to these questions is Scottish Natural Heritage. And so the actual initiation of taking Vendace back into Scotland was at the action of Scottish Natural Heritage, who primarily wanted to reintroduce this lost species back to Scotland, bearing in mind they had two populations and they were lost. So they initiated it, and the south of the border, the Environment Agency and our Natural England were very happy about this, because that offered the chance of establishing a refuge population. Before we lost the fish from Bassenthwaite, we could establish another population from it in good quality conditions. So it was a nice indication of cooperation between different bodies, between different areas. In terms of the philosophy of fire brigade or building arcs with fish species and so on, it's something that I have some problems with personally, because you're not addressing the real environmental problem. You're doing a bit of anticipatory first aid, as it were, I think. So it's good as a last resort, but it is a last resort, yeah.
Ian, in terms of your time in Northern Ireland, there's one thing that puzzles me greatly. Everybody I talk to who's an expert in whitefish and Vendace and pollen and so on always make the statement that you've made a little earlier, that they need particularly clean and very healthy conditions to actually... what's coming.
I know exactly what you're going to say, and I don't know.
They always need these pristine conditions. And I've done, and you have done, some sampling on Loch Ness. I was absolutely horrified the first time I ran a class on Loch Ness in terms of the impacts of the pollution. And yet, Loch Ness is heaving with populations of pollen. It's the most extraordinary conundrum. Any idea at all as to why that would be the case?
Yes, it continues to surprise me. I think the things that partially explain it is because although Loch Ness is very large, 383 square kilometres, its average depth is something ridiculously shallow. Like I remember 5 or 9 metres or something.
That's correct.
Very, 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 very shallow. And so the water in the lake really sort of stratifies, and you really get oxygen problems developing for extensive periods of time because the water's mixed up so much by the wind, and because it's so shallow it all mixes up really quite efficiently. So we don't get the deep water oxygen problems that we would get if that lake was say 100 metres deep or even 50 metres deep. So I think that's part of the explanation for it. And the other aspect is there's a lot of hard substrate, a hard bottom in Loch Ness around it. Lots of areas with sand and with gravel. There are still sandy bays, it's like small beaches. There's been commercial extraction of gravels, and at least until recently, I think I'm sure it's still going on. So there's a couple of potential explanations which sort of explain to some extent this remarkable persistence of the pollen in a very peculiar lake. Bearing in mind that just about the same species, I'm sure as you know, Ken, it is also found in Lake Baikal in Siberia, in a body of water which is about as different as it could possibly be.
And has there been DNA analysis done on these to show that they are very different species or very similar species or the same species?
Yes, there's been a lot of DNA work done in recent years, and before that other forms of genetic work. Professor Andy Ferguson at Queen's University in Belfast has done a lot of this work, and there have been people since. And we're now getting closer to looking at the actual DNA of the animals themselves through various more direct routes. And speaking as an ecologist, I'm forever getting emails and many emails these days from geneticists who dearly like to have little samples of fish to have a look at, to look at the DNA and to put through the latest kind of sequencing that they can do. So it's questions which are always changing in terms of the most appropriate answers to them.
Ian,
that sounds terribly... Sorry, that sounds terribly waffly, but speaking as a non-geneticist, that's the general impression that I get, to be honest.
Yeah, you're celebrating Loch Ness pollen, and Ken and yourself are amazed at the numbers of pollen, and there's a pollen fishery there. But we had a lady on the Mooney Show not so long ago lamenting the sudden disappearance of ducks, and it was a great place for ducks, Loch Ness, and
yes,
they have gone from the place. Now, if the ducks have gone, it means that the things they're feeding on probably aren't as abundant as they were there before. Now, these things feed, a lot of them, on the larvae of mollusks and things of this kind. Is there a risk to these fish? Are we sure the fish are as abundant as they were? Are things changing?
Well, in terms of are the fish as abundant as they were, we don't really know. To the best of my knowledge, there's still no monitoring program, extensive monitoring program of the fish of Loch Ness itself. I worked in Northern Ireland from 1985 to 1990, and we had a kind of program going there, but then that stopped sometime after I had left. So we don't actually know what's happening with the fish, and we don't have terrific information on the fishery catches. The question with the ducks, it's mainly the diving ducks, I think. These are overwintering ducks, so ducks which come from all over Europe to spend the winter on Loch Ness. I know they crashed spectacularly a few years ago. Part of that, I think, is to do with differing migration patterns across Europe, because we've had these succession of milder winters in recent years, by and large. So there's been some change in the movements of wildfowl around Europe, which means they don't travel as far south, which means we don't see the numbers appearing at Loch Ness like we used to. There's been some very nice work done by PhD students in Northern Ireland on this issue, and I'm sure that would be a topic in its own, just to look at that.
Well, you're delighted to have the fish back, no doubt, but how did it disappear and then end up coming back? Who found it?
Well, we sort of watched it disappearing. The thing with this species, they're very rarely seen by an angler because they're feeding on very small animals in the water column. So we don't get any background information from anglers. So because of that, we undertook this annual sampling program in association with different organisations, our Environment Agency and United Utilities, our local water company. So we watched it disappear, and then it was our annual sampling which picked it up again. 2 years ago, in 2013, we found the first Vendace in Bassenthwaite returning as a single underyearling fish.
So it is there. How many? Do you have any ideas?
Well, we use netting to see what species are there, and then we use echo sounding, hard acoustics, to actually count the fish. Unfortunately, the echo sounder can't tell us what species we're counting, so we have to use the nets to apportion those counts into different species. And when we do that, with some assumptions, so there's some uncertainty around this, but I think we're in the order of an adult Vendace population of the order of 1,200 fish, with possibility of 200 or 300 either side of that estimate.
That's happy days. Ian, thank you very much indeed. What kind of populations would you need to keep the population going if something, Ken, is declared locally extinct? How many would be left in the water? How many would you need to start the populations again and bring them back?
Generally, what the geneticists say, and I stand to be corrected on this, but generally in relation to trout and salmon, they always tell us that 50 spawning pairs, i.e. about 100 fish, is enough to actually give you a population that will not become inbred and that can breed outwards from there, which is a surprisingly small number of fish. Certainly, if you're up at 11 or 1200, you have a substantial number of fish, and I really think it's a great success.
No, I think you said 100 or 200, didn't he? Yeah.
No, 1,200.
Oh,
1,200. But they could all be related to each other. They may be all brothers and sisters.
Well, that's what I'm saying, that really, if you have 50 spawning pairs in terms of salmonids, and I'm only assuming at this stage it may be the same for the Vendace, that's sufficient in terms of making sure that you actually get a healthy population. So it's great to see that coming back, and interesting to see it coming back at a time when we are seeing changes again in terms of the climate patterns, and it may very well be that it's actually following those patterns in those deep lakes. So it's a very interesting species.